Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Arm Radio.
Well, good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our weekly vigorous, relentless, and typically ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are broadcasting live from the very well-armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin. It's my pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That's you guys. You are your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, my name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well Armed Radio. And I encourage you to be part of the show with commenting in the, well, certainly with your calls, commenting in the chat, or again, you can call the show. The new number, I had the same number for the show for 7 years, and then I don't know why it switched. I downgraded when I started using Facebook Live instead of Blog Talk. I downgraded my plan with Blog Talk to a non-premium plan, but I don't know why the phone number changed, because the number's not, I don't know, maybe the non-premium plans you couldn't have call in. I don't know. Anyway, so when I when Facebook, Fascist Book, sorry, I got that one wrong, when Fascist Book booted me off of their program for reasons unknown to me and you, though I could speculate what they might have been. But then I rejoined Blog Talk, or the premium plan for Blog Talk, and when I did that, got a new phone number. So the new phone number is, and I still remember the old one, 646-716-8739. That was the old one. That one doesn't work. But after 7 years, I got that one. The new phone number is 563-999-3787. That's 563-999-3787. This is the studio number here to Well Armed Radio. Start the show with the usual warning, no sacred cows here. And as always, or as is almost always, I'll do the first 15 minutes of the show, open line, anything you want to call in. But otherwise, through the remainder of the show, definitely call in, just preferably to be to the topics. If you have a topic that you want to throw out there, certainly feel free. I would suggest maybe if you're using the chat function, you could click, just type the question in the chat function if you want to change the subject to a different topic. If you were to type that in the chat function, or if you're I don't know where my listeners are going to source the program from, or find their way to the program from now that I'm off of Facebook. But if you want to, if you're on MeWe, which is where I hang my hat now, along with some other of my fellow patriots who got off of fascist book, me without not having a choice, them, some of them by choice. But I monitor the MeWe. If you're on MeWe, it would be MeWe.com/P. I think that's how MeWe does their pages. MeWe.com/P/WellArmedRadio. And then you'll find the WellArmed Radio page. There's a post today about today's show. And that's where I'm going to keep one eye on, too, for anybody who wants to make a comment. If you comment in the the topic for tonight's show, excuse me, it's posted. That's great radio, a good yawn in your ear. The topic for tonight's show, if you post in that topic, I'll keep an eye on that in order to get people's comments there. So best way for me to see it right away would be on Blog Talk Radio on the chat function. If you're listening from a phone, I think the chat isn't available because I think the chat uses Flash, not positive, but I think the chat uses Flash. So if you're listening from a phone, most phones I don't think have Flash. You can then go to the Well Armed Radio page and on MeWe. And Zach, maybe Zach's listening tonight. Zach gave a thumbs up on the page here. So maybe Zach's in. I'm not sure who else. We're not up against the professional football team from Green Bay last week, which I kind of have to apologize for because I'm not a sports fan. I sometimes have it on just for background noise. I feel guilty for having it on now because I really want to boycott the NFL. But last week I turned the show on just so I was curious. I figured a lot of the listeners would be watching the show. Just kind of watching out of the corner of my eye to see if what was going on in the game, just out of curiosity to know if the Packers were up big, maybe people would be more tuning into the show than otherwise. But it ended up distracting me as I was trying to pay attention to what was happening, just to get an idea of what some of you out there in the audience might be. I know some people watch the show and have the radio on, or excuse me, the computer on for Blog Talk. But anyway, so I think Zach is in. Zach says, good evening from New Richmond. So now, Zach, you're going to make me Google it because New Richmond sounds familiar, but I got to, all right, what part of the state is New Richmond, Wisconsin? New Richmond. St. Croix County. You're way up there. That's close to the Twin Cities, I guess. New Richmond is a city in St. Croix County, Wisconsin. Its population was 8,375 as of the 2010 census. So that's New Richmond. And Zach is tuned in from New Richmond tonight. So Zach, great to have you with. Thanks for tuning in. So I got one. We got one listener. December 3rd, I gave the usual warning, I believe, no sacred cows here. December 3rd, here we are, a few weeks left till Christmas. I love this time of year. Fall's my favorite time. Early fall's probably my favorite time of year, like when I can still golf, still boat, but maybe we've had a freeze and the bugs are gone. That's my favorite time of year. Still take the yacht out on Saturdays, still go golfing on Friday and Sundays. The fall after the time change, I wouldn't call that my favorite season. I would say I like summer. Fall before the time change, before we set the clocks, spring forward, fall back. So before we set the clocks back, which makes the sun set earlier. Prior to that, which I think is, I don't know, is it around the first weekend in November, something like that, November 2nd or something like that. But so fall prior to that is my favorite time of year, which I guess we'd put September 21st up until November, favorite time of year. Second favorite time of year would be summer. Third favorite time of year would be late spring. And then, I take that back. It would probably go early fall is my favorite time of year. Summer is my second favorite time of year. Late fall is my third favorite time of year. Right along with late spring is another one. Early spring is the only time that, it's so sloppy and You get snow. It doesn't last long. They salt the shit out of the roads. You get a half inch of snow. They put down a quarter inch of salt. Everything's sloppy, muddy, early fall or early spring. You know, we're talking March. And sometimes we can have good weather in March, but really March is just, I don't know, it's kind of a shit month. It's okay. You know, in March when you get snow, you're done with it. In December, you get snow, cool. In January, you get snow, cool. In February, you get snow. But in March when you get snow, I mean, you're just done with it. And you know it's not going to last around for long. It's just everything's going to be sloppy as hell. So, yeah, March is probably my least favorite time of year. And then winter's okay. I mean, you know, the two things I do, I mean, it's my Saturday afternoons is my only free time. I mean, it's, well, I do golf. And, hey, we got Lon in here. So we got two. Lon's in from Wausau. Lon, good to have you. So during the summer, we're on the yacht. I bought a new yacht this year, a really nice yacht, Cruisers, Grand Luxury Sport 38 Cruisers. It's called a 38 GLS, stands for Grand Luxury Sport. Beautiful, beautiful boat. So that's what we do every Saturday. Fridays and Sundays, I golf. But during the winter, we hike with the dog every Saturday. That's what we did yesterday. So once the yacht gets put away, that's what we do on Saturdays, hike with the dog. So I love winter. It's just beautiful out there. Fewer people. The thing about hiking in the winter, like I don't like to hike in the summer. You sweat, you got bugs, you got all the leaves in the trees. It's humid. And ticks. It's just not my cup of tea. But on the other hand, in the winter, and the other thing is in the summer, when you're hiking in the summer, depending on where you're hiking, but when you're hiking in the summer, you can't see shit. There's so many leaves in the tree. There's so much underbrush. When you're walking through, I mean, you don't see much. But when you're hiking in like the late fall and early fall, the leaves are on the trees and it's just the color changes. It's just beautiful. So that's still a good time for hiking. Although again, early fall, I'm still on the yacht, hopefully, depending on the weather. But then late fall, the leaves are off the trees and the views are so much better. When you're hiking, we do a lot of hiking in the Kettle Moraine. We do a lot of hiking on the Ice Age Trail, which crisscrosses the whole state. But when you're hiking in the late fall and in the winter, you can see forever. I mean, the leaves are off the trees. And whereas you go through, and I made that comment to my fiance while walking, we see just these beautiful, you know, beautiful wet kettles. Wet kettles are where you're going through the Kettle Moraine. You're up on an esker, and esker is like the winding ridges that are at the top of the, you know, these hills, these mounds in the Kettle Moraine. And then a wet kettle is where it's like some of the kettles is a depression and it's full of water. So you get these wet kettles sometimes they're, you know, 100 yards off and down in a ravine. And again, I call it a ravine. It's not a ravine. It's a kettle. The difference from a ravine kind of be like a long ravine, but a kettle is just like a kettle shaped depression. It's not like a valley with a long, you know, it's just one little bowl. But sometimes those are like 100 yards away, but you would never see them in the summer. With the underbrush and with the leaves and the trees, you wouldn't see that there. And you can't see, and sometimes you can't even see how elevated you are. I mean, sometimes in the Kettle Moraine, you get to these nice elevated, like the Parnell Esker is one of the famous ones. And you're walking along the top of these long serpent-like ridges formed by the glaciers. And you got drop-offs on both sides. It's super cool. I mean, I can't say you feel like you're hiking in the Rockies because there's a time or two where I felt like I was like in the foothills of the Rockies with some of the views, but sometimes you feel like you're hiking in the Smoky Mountains. It gives you that kind of mountain feel when you're hiking the Ice Age Trail. And again, you would never see it during the summer because there's so many leaves in the trees that you couldn't, and forget the mosquitoes and the sweating and the heat and no. And the sounds are different. The smells are different and the sounds are different. It smells different in the winter than the summer and it sounds different. I mean, in the summer, you got bugs buzzing your head. You've got cicadas making noise. You've got it's birds. It's loud. But in the fall and in the winter, it's very quiet. It smells different. It sounds different. It's just, I wouldn't enjoy hiking in the summer. I love hiking in the winter. And that's what we do every Saturday. And again, it's so much, I think that the hiking is a premium in the winter. I think it's the better time. There's fewer people out there. Although this time of year, I mean, it's still, there's hunters everywhere. So we see a lot of people, but especially, you know, after January 1st, then there's not many hunters. I don't think there's even many seasons. I don't even know there's a few hunting seasons open. I think coyote's probably still open and maybe a squirrel or cottontail rabbit up north or something. But yeah, it's just fall, winter is just a great time. So I don't mind winter because we had got something fun to do. And that's hike with the dog all winter long. So anyway, that's what we did yesterday. Actually, we were down by just east of Whitewater in the Kettle Moraine down there. So, but the first thing I was going to talk about on the show here is Friday. I was, and this is, you know, pertains to this whole coronanoia, this ridiculous overreaction, disproportionate reaction to corona. Look, the coronavirus is a real thing. I think it should have been treated just like the flu. I think the media should have made people aware of it. Here's this new thing. It tends to hit some people harder. But here's the thing. And we know for a fact they've overstated the death toll. So for all these reasons, I'm not even 100% sure that if we had an honest accounting of coronavirus, I'm not even sure that it would be worse than a bad flu season. And with that said, the asterisk being that we do, one thing that we can say is that hospitals are full or close to full. So that's something that they really can't fake. But here's what you'll realize. The number of hospital beds in the state are minimal. I mean, it doesn't take much to fill up hospitals. Hospitals are volume for-profit operations, even the ones that are not-for-profit. They're volume revenue-driven. Even if they're not-for-profit, that's just a tax organization status. They just turn around and use that, redistribute that money all kinds of ways that isn't profit to shareholders, and they call themselves they're organized as a nonprofit. But the way that hospitals have been set up is these money-making operations. You know, they've got they do a lot of day surgeries. I mean, they're not set up to have this excess capacity. Excess capacity is wasted. So over the years, as hospitals have evolved, here we've got Internet Friend. We've got an Internet Friend has joined. Internet Friend, great to have you as well. So although I can't tell I can't see from the picture what if Internet Friend is is someone from overseas trolling the page, but we'll see. So where was I? Now I lost my train of thought. coronavirus hospitals. So hospitals, their volume, I mean, you've got these orthopedic hospitals that do knee replacements and hip replacements and a lot of that stuff. I mean, it's get you in, get you out, hit your wallet and boom, you're out the door. We don't have hospitals sitting there with all kinds of excess capacity on a regular basis because, he says, I'm Jewish and I'm wanting to learn about guns. So now you're going to make me feel compelled to talk about guns tonight. we'll have a little bit on guns tonight, but we'll see what we can do here. Internet Friend, who's clicked into the chat here. But hospitals they don't sit there. You know, you would think these hospitals don't sit there with all this excess capacity. So when people say, oh, hospitals are full, hospitals, well, you got to understand hospitals, they've over the years developed their metrics of how many rooms and beds they need for various things on an annual basis. And then they use those metrics to look, everything's gone. Manufacturing is just-in-time manufacturing. Manufacturers don't sit there with stockpiles of raw materials. They get their raw materials delivered to them just as they need it on that schedule. And same thing with hospitals. Hospitals don't sit there nowadays with these massive empty wings of the hospital. Hospitals sit there very much tailored to here's someone, Ashley A., screw guns, get nukes. Okay. So we got someone calling in here. Where's area code 619? I'm going to see what that is here for a second. Area code 619. That would be San Diego. So a caller from San Diego, perhaps. All right. We'll get to you in a few minutes here. But back to hospitals. So these hospitals are full or getting to full. And people think, oh, that means that the coronavirus is such a terrible thing. Look, hospitals don't have a lot of excess capacity. that wouldn't make business sense to them. And so over the years, they've got their metrics. And that's why in the spring, they started canceling elective procedures so that they had hospital beds available for coronavirus patients. And they never needed it. In the spring, it was never needed. These auxiliary hospitals, too, they were built in Chicago and in McCormick Place, and they were never needed. The one that they built in Milwaukee, I think they built one in Seattle, never saw a patient, took it down. They built a ton of them in New York. They had very, very few. Most of them were unneeded. The Javits Center in New York, they brought the USS Comfort in, which had like, I forget how many hundreds of beds available on a Navy ship. And that ended up not being, they put like 15 people on it. And that was it. So, but this notion that, oh, because hospitals are full, that means that coronavirus must be some terrible thing, so much worse than the flu. I'm not so convinced because, again, hospitals don't have that much capacity to start with. When hospitals were full, think about this whole state of Wisconsin. They were calling hospitals, filling up. They had like, I saw some of the numbers, like 4,600, like just under 5,000 people, hospitalized in the entire state of Wisconsin. There's 6 million people in the state. So it's, I mean, a big outbreak like, you know, Spanish flu or something. I mean, think about tens of thousands of people hospitalized. We don't have that. So is coronavirus, does it represent a more significant respiratory illness than the seasonal flu? Yeah, because I think the hospitals have had their logarithms and their metrics, their statistics, they've calculated to have capacity for the seasonal flu, but they didn't. This coronavirus has tested that capacity. With that said, even the State Fair Overflow Hospital in Milwaukee hasn't been packed full. It just hasn't. They had like 15 patients in there at one point, and that was it. I mean, could have 500 people in that. They've only had, I think the tops they've ever had is like 15 or something like that. So the coronavirus, look, I think it's been overblown by the media. I think there's plenty of evidence that this thing, it should have been treated like the seasonal flu. I think people that would have died from the flu are dying from coronavirus. I think people that every year people get more and more healthy and you get the seasonal flu every year. And some of those end up in the hospital and need hospitalization. So coronavirus, is it worse? I mean, yeah, I would say it's worse than the seasonal flu, but not worse enough to justify everything that they've done. I think it's ridiculous what they've done. I think it's ridiculous what they've done with the coronavirus and the imposition of all these dictatorial mandates from governors. I mean, I think it's absolutely absurd what they did. In many cases, they made it worse. In New York, the reason New York got so bad is bad decisions by the governor. They were freaking out. They were sending sick people with COVID back into nursing homes, which was the last thing to do. It's like throwing a match into a grill that you just put a lighter fluid on. That's my opinion, backed up by now 6+ months of research and looking beyond the fake news. So, but all that said, here we have all these mask mandates and impositions put on us by the state. Now, here in Wisconsin, they've had this mask mandate now for I don't know how long. It's an emergency order, totally unconstitutional. And here's the thing. The reason that they give dictatorial powers in emergencies, they have these emergency powers. The reason they do that is because, especially in the old days, you know, before technology like we have today, you couldn't convene a legislature in a short period of time to act. So they gave executives, governors, dictatorial emergency powers that essentially amounted to, in some cases, like somewhat dictatorial powers. But those are for emergencies. And then when statutes were written, these were for in Wisconsin 60 days, because essentially what they're saying is 60 days is all you get for an emergency. Because if something goes on more than 60 days, it's not an emergency. Doesn't mean if it's not severe, something can be serious, but not urgent, then it's not an emergency. To be an emergency, it has to be serious and it has to be urgent. If it's not serious, but it's urgent, that's not an emergency. You got to take care of it right away, but it's not that big of a deal. That's not an emergency. If it's very, very serious, but it's not urgent, you know, it's a very serious thing, but you've got time, again, not an emergency. So an emergency has to be serious and urgent. And when it comes to coronavirus, it's not urgent. Nothing that goes on for 6 months is an emergency. Is it an issue? Sure. But by now, they should have, or if they wanted to, they could have convened the legislature. There is no justification for emergency powers for something that's not an emergency. It's not enough to be serious. And Tony Evers says, oh, it's still an emergency. No, it's not an emergency. It's been going on for 9 months now. It's not an emergency. They had time to convene the legislature. If the legislature didn't convene, that's the legislature's, and that's on them. They could have convened. If they wanted to convene, they would have convened. So nothing about this, anyway, so all this stuff I believe is 100% unconstitutional. It's shocking how they pushed it through. It's shocking how they let it go, and disappointing as hell. So where am I going with this? Friday I go to my daughters, they play basketball here in New Berlin. Go to the high, they're only allowing 2 tickets per player. So in other words, you got a daughter who plays, mom and dad can go to the game, and that's it. Nobody else can go because they're trying to keep crowd size down. Look, these were high school girls' basketball games. They were never packed anyway, rarely. I mean, they were never packed in. But here they go, these uppity idiot bureaucrat administrators at schools trying to think they're saving the world with their pathetic charade of these coronavirus precautions, COVID precautions. So you have to wear a mask, supposedly, when you go to the school, to the games. You have to social on the building outside, on the field house doors. They have all kinds of, here it says, are you taking callers? Yeah, I'm going to take callers. Not sure who sent that. So yeah, let me get this to this call. I'll finish up this topic real quick here, and how do I get this out of the way? I didn't know people could, now how do I get back to my, see, I'm learning here. I'm trying to figure out Blog Talk's new, let me get back to, see now I'm trying to figure out how to settings back. See, now I can't see the chat because someone sent me a message. Close the screen using the hidden X. Where's the hidden X? It's next to the up and down arrow. Where's the hidden X? I can't see the hidden X. There it is. Okay, got it. All right, so if someone's on hold, I'm going to take that call. Sorry, you've been on hold for 8 minutes now. I'm just trying to not interrupt my first topic here. I'll cut it short. So on the door of the field house, it says 6 social distance required. Plastered all over the field house. It also says masks required. But of course, all the mask mandates statewide, they always have medical exceptions. That's written into the executive orders, whatever. And so I don't wear a mask. I've never worn a mask. I don't put face diapers on. It's just, that's my choice. Anybody wants to wear one, you go right ahead. Freedom has a solution here. You want to wear a mask? Wear a mask. You don't want to wear a mask? Don't wear a mask. Masks don't prevent the spread of COVID. If they did, we wouldn't have these outbreaks that we have now. I don't think, there's no clinical evidence. In a lab, they've done tests and said that proves it, but that doesn't prove it. It proves that it alters your breath state. It alters your distribution of breath, but it hasn't shown that it, they've done tests overseas, Danish studies, that COVID doesn't, that masks don't stop the spread of respiratory illnesses. And so, but regardless, so I go in, the athletic director, was watching it on the YouTube channel because I didn't go to the game because I'm not going to sit there. But I was driving by to go to my fiance's house. There was a couple minutes left in the game, so I stopped at the high school, go in the field house. There was 2.5 minutes left in the game. Stand on the edge of the court, just where nobody, you know, you're out of the way. I didn't go sit in the bleachers or nothing. Watched the last 2.5 minutes. I was getting ready to turn around and walk out. The game ends. Then I see some of the JV players walking by, and I was like, oh, I'll wait and see if one of my other daughters walks by. And then the athletic director for the school comes hustling up to me. Mr. Clark, you can't be in here without a mask. I said, I'm exempt. He said, oh, there's no exemptions, no exemptions. I said, really? I said, every mask mandate that I've seen, the CDC had, they honor the CDC exemptions. I'm exempt. No, we don't. I said, oh, fine, I'll leave. He goes, well, thank you. And I turned around and said, no, don't thank me for kicking me out of my daughter's basketball game. I just, but anyway, so this guy, I go back and I look at the video and I see, because I was trying to figure out who came over to say it to me. I thought it was the athletic director, but with the mask on, I confused him for someone else. So I go back to watch the video, the YouTube video that they had streamed of this game. And I see, here's the athletic director sitting elbow to elbow with someone from the Pewaukee, this is another town nearby, Pewaukee coaching staff, right next to him. And it says right on the building entrance, social distance required. You have to stay 6 feet from anybody that is not part of your household. Now, I don't know the lifestyle choices of the athletic director from New Berlin West, but I'm pretty sure he doesn't live. I'm pretty sure whoever that was from the Pewaukee High School, doesn't live in his household. So here's this hypocrite coming over and berating me for not wearing a mask, and there's two signs in their doors, masks required, social distance required, while he was just over there breaking the own rules of social distance. And it just, this astounds me. Just this utter hypocrisy. Hypocrisy, intolerance, and double standards, those are liberal family values. And obviously we know 90% of the people that work for school districts are liberals. But so, you know, I'm not going to sit back and take this kind of shit. And I bring this up because I think you guys shouldn't either. When you see this kind of crap, you have to push back. So what did I do? I took a screen capture of the video from the video feed showing this basketball game, showing the athletic director sitting over there. And there's two people, the people sitting on both sides of him, neither of which I'm sure are from his household, literally elbow to elbow. So he's violating his own. He's going to come and enforce one of the requirements, supposedly the mask mandate, while he was just breaking the other one. So this guy is selectively deciding which of the rules, the COVID rules, he's going to enforce. It's just utter bullshit. And this kind of hypocrisy, this rules for me but not for thee, this shit happens daily with the, you see these governors issuing executive orders and closing down restaurants, and then 20 minutes later, ending the press conference, jumping on a private plane or jumping in a limo or jumping in a car and going a town away and having dinner in a restaurant. It's just utter hypocrisy. So there's an email list that goes to all the parents. It's got like 67 people on it. So I took a screen capture of the athletic director sitting there elbow to elbow with other people, violating his own rules of social distancing at the game. I sent an email out I CC'd all the parents from the basketball team, said, hey, we're sitting here having a quota of only being allowed two people per game, told the social distance, forced to wear masks. And then here's this guy breaking his own rules, sitting at the yucking it up with the coaches from a couple people from Pewaukee, sitting elbow to elbow. And so I emailed that around to the entire basketball program team. And put the athletic director on blast. And I don't care. Like, well, some people are like, oh, I wouldn't do that. You know, your daughter's going to get blacklisted. Look, my daughters are both starters. They're very good. I mean, if they want to blacklist my daughters. Here, Hank Jones says, if the left didn't have double standards, they'd have no standards. Absolutely. And if the left, if it wasn't for low class, the left would have no class. I mean, these guys are pathetic, absolute. They're immoral. And I'm dead serious. I don't make friends with liberals. I don't want to. I believe they're immoral. When if you walked into someone's house and you stole their money, you'd be a thief. If you turn around and vote for someone to take someone's money, you're the same. You're just a thief who doesn't have the balls to walk in someone's house and steal it. So I genuinely believe liberals are immoral. But anyway, all right. So I'm going to take this first call here. Let me get my headset here because the person's been on hold for 14 minutes. So we'll see what we got here. San Diego area code and. Get him live here. All right. Welcome to Well Armed Radio. Who's this?
Hi, this is Randy.
Randy, where are you calling from?
From Oceanside, right next
Oceanside.
To Camp Pendleton.
All right.
Yes, sir.
So I appreciate you holding there. I didn't want to interrupt my first topic, which I rambled on for. But no, thanks for calling in. What do you got for us?
No, I wouldn't say that was rambling on. I can really appreciate everything you were saying, and I feel like you put your point across very articulately and more so than others like myself, but I can really truly appreciate everything you're doing. I'm actually at a gun range right now, so you have to forgive me. We're I'm in between setting up the targets and whatnot. So, But
you require no forgiveness for being at a gun range. You have, if anybody at a gun range that calls this show requires no forgiveness whatsoever.
Well, I appreciate that. It's really funny because being in California, we have so much hypocrisy that takes place. We can start at the level of the governor, where he was caught at the French line, you know, with the same breath. I'm sorry. One day he's saying, you know, we need to keep social distancing. We need to close all the restaurants, and then the very next night, he's caught in what's called the French Laundry. It's a restaurant in Napa Valley, sitting elbow to elbow with at least 12 people.
And is your governor? Is that Newsom? Is Newsom the governor of California?
That's Gavin. Yes.
Okay.
Gavin,
yeah. Because
I've
heard it in the
news. By the way, have you ever researched Gavin Newsom? It's a really interesting. Yeah, well, he was caught back in the early 2000s. At one point, he was caught with cocaine. He was under the influence of cocaine. And this is not make. I swear, if you look it up right now on your computer, you'll find it. He was caught with cocaine. He was also caught in a homosexual relationship. Not a joke. This is not BS. And also cheating on his wife with another, having an affair with a staffer. Look that up. You could actually look it up. I think Dave Chappelle did a stand-up on that, laughing about Gavin Newsom. That's before he was governor. This is, I think, he was like a congressperson. He was a congressman.
Who was the mayor? Was it Marion Barry? Was that the mayor of D.C. who was snorting coke on video one time many years back?
That's back like what, early 90s.
Yeah, am I dating myself? I just remember that the guy is, and then I think he was snorting coke on TV. Then had to, I think he resigned or something, maybe as mayor, and then turns around and I thought he got elected to something again.
Was that DC or was that Detroit?
Maybe it was Detroit. There was a guy from Detroit too who. See now, I'm tempted to Google because
they're both Democrats, so it doesn't matter, you know.
Yeah, it's all the same. Yeah,
but
for I think it was Marion Barry. Marion Barry was the mayor of the District of Columbia. But there was another mayor. I know you're talking about. There was a mayor from. Yeah, here it was. Mayor of the district. But there was another mayor from, because Marion Barry was D.C. But there was a guy from Detroit, and I can't remember his name. It's right on the tip of my tongue. But yeah, he got. What did he call for? Some kind of corruption, some kind of big corruption.
Oh, and then we have Jenkins, Mayor Jenkins. I think he was New York. He was also caught with a prostitute. Okay. Democrat as well.
That's a big old Democrat thing. The coke, man. They, you know, I guess if you're in California and you're gay, you do drugs and have affairs. Well, that's the resume for a politician for California.
It's all right. It's not a big deal. As long as you're gay, you're doing cocaine, you're cheating on your wife, and you're having a homosexual affair. No problem. No problem. You're good to go. We have one second. If you don't mind, I have to go up and load up these racks real quick. I can do it. I have you on my headset. And, hold on.
Well, so the
if
we end your call with you firing off a couple rounds, that's the best way to finish this call. So let's
yeah, no, for sure. No. Hold on, guys. Hold on. Hold on. No.
I don't know if that was planned or if that was, but that was a good one. So, all right. That's what we get for taking random calls. No, that was a good call. All right. So, what do I have next lined up here? I've got a caller from California. Great to have him with us. So, that was my first topic. I was talking about that hypocrisy with these, my advice to people in this, is you can do what you want to do. I'm not telling anybody what to do, but I'm just suggesting, you know, when you see this kind of crap, you got to, so I send this thing out and look, I, there's going to be parents who were nodding their head in agreement. I send this email out. John says, what if that man was hurt? I think it was a skit. I think it was a joke. Randy, that's right, Randy. Ashley remembered his name. I think he was doing that to be funny. John says it sounds like that man was injured. I don't think so. But how do you been injured? How do you get injured at the range? He was loading up the targets. Yeah, he was a real caller. He was definitely a real caller, but I think that was his way of ending his call. I think his way of ending the call was to go out with a joke. I mean, I'm presuming that was a joke. I don't think that was real, but anyway, we'll go on that assumption. No, John says he didn't sound like a troll. No, I don't think he was a troll. I think he was just cracking a little joke on his way out. Internet friend says, rest in peace, Randy. and here we are laughing, and if something really did happen, I'll feel terrible. But I think that was his little joke on the way out. But yeah, so I'm going to push back. I'm not going to sit here and Ashley, his wife just texted me he died. I don't know how we're going to find out if Randy's in the chat. Randy's got to let us know if he's okay. So, back to hypocrisy. If we don't push back, these people need to be made to be as uncomfortable as they try to make us. When I sent that email around and put the athletic director of New Berlin West on blast with a screen picture of him sitting elbow to elbow with people when he prevents parents from having, you can only bring two people, can't bring grandma and grandpa, can't bring your siblings. So you guys, someone says, I'm calling the cops. Someone needs to call the cops. I mean, what are you going to call the cops for? Someone died on your show and you think it's funny. No, actually, I don't think someone died. If I thought someone died, I wouldn't think it was funny. But I'm pretty sure that was a skit. And that people say they're calling the cops. How are you going to call the cops? What a guy, he was calling from California. I've got his phone number. We think that man was injured. Yeah, that's my point. First, there's no way we're going to know because the call was dropped. Oh, Cobras, I'm reporting this show to Blog Talk. I'm disgusted. Give me a break. Go ahead and report it, Cobra Jeff. I mean, seriously, we have no way to know if that guy was hurt or not. Call him back. Jot down the number here. 619. I'm showing the number to my producer. My producer is going to try to call him back. I'll let you know. So next topic, we're finishing up that topic, that hypocrisy. So I send around an email. Actually, you know what? I can call from, no, I'll just let the producer do it. I send that email around to parents with the picture so that all the other parents can be, and some of the parents are probably going to be like, oh, no big deal. You know, he's the athletic director, but some of the parents are going to be irritated. And Ashley says, yes, he did die. Call him from the show. Oh, gosh, you guys are something else. Where do we call from? How do I dial in? Here we go. All right, switchboard call. Phone number 619. All right, I'm calling. See what we got here. All right, says call failed. Call was not answered. So, don't know what to tell you. I think it was a skit. I think it was a stunt. Ashley, if you're being 100% serious, how do you know him? Ashley A says, I'm being 100%. Ashley says, he blew his head right off. Okay, now Ashley and I know. He didn't blow his head off. He's dead. You guys are something else. I'm getting pranked here. So, all right. So, hypocrisy. By sending that email around with the picture of the athletic director breaking his own COVID restrictions, you know, some of the parents might agree with me, some might not. But here's the thing. The next game he's at, he knows people are going to be watching him. And it's when someone comes up to him and sits next to him, he's going to have to say, when he's in the chat, he's going to have to say, Ashley in the chat is saying, I told you in the chat, I'm a close family friend. Jeff, sick fucking show. Oh, you guys are too much. By putting that email together, putting him on blast, all the other parents, he's going to know people are going to be watching him. So that athletic director, when he's sitting there next Friday at a game, he's going to be worrying that people are looking, worrying what people are saying. If someone comes up to him and sits close to him to talk, he's going to have to say, excuse me, we need to keep social distance. And that's going to be uncomfortable for him. And to that I say, good. He's going to be uncomfortable, and that's good, because the rest of us are uncomfortable with all the shit that he puts us through. So is anything going to change? I mean, is there any winning? Yeah, there's winning. This is the same thing as taxes. I support a flat tax, you know, whatever it be, 15%. Everybody pays 15%. Then when 50% tax, then if someone says, hey, we got to raise taxes, pay more money for this, then everybody's taxes goes up. Everybody has to feel the pinch if you want to start paying for more and more stuff. So that's my opinion when it comes to things like this. You know, we need to hold these administrators to the same standards that they hold us to. Next thing I was going to talk about tonight was I've got a couple of what I'm going to talk about here. I have the next topic I had was Black Lives Matter. Okay, I'll talk about that one, Black Lives Matter. So I'll stick on this topic because it involves my daughter's school as well. So my daughter's school says there's a teacher sends home a survey with the class to do at dinner with your parents. And that survey says, starts with this. This is the quote from how the teacher describes it. Surveys show people in the U.S. are not as happy as those in other countries. Discuss around the dinner table why you think that is. So that's what the assignment that was sent home, I guess I wouldn't call it a survey of parents, but assignment sent home to discuss around the dinner table. And this comes from, you know, the public school teacher. So that was the homework assignment. Surveys show people in the U.S. are not as happy as those in other countries. Discuss around the dinner table why you think that is. So the first thing I said to the kids was, look, you guys, this is something you guys need to understand. This starts with a false premise. The false premise to start here with is that people in other countries are happier than the U.S. Where is that survey? I mean, this is what this teacher sends home, this homework assignment for us to discuss around the dinner table. And it starts with a false premise. Surveys show people in the U.S. are not as happy as those in other countries. Says who? Who's to say I'm you know, not as happy as someone in France? Who's to say someone in France is happier than, you know, what surveys? I'd have to see the surveys. What questions? So I don't even trust the premise there to begin with. But what they're trying to do is get you to sit around the dinner table and talk down about the United States and about everything that's wrong with the United States. And, oh, if we were just France, if we were socialists, we had socialism. And that's where this assignment is driving. Trying to drive your family's dinner time conversation. There were other stuff coming home from the kids from their public school math class questions that were completely politically driven in nature. And it's just this whole, whether it's, oh, so Black Lives Matter, one of my daughter's teachers every day would tell her class, oh, Black Lives Matter, remember Black Lives Matter. You guys remember Black Lives Matter. And so, all right, so I'm going to pause. So you guys are, I'm convinced that some of you guys are just trolling the show for fun to try to have some joy here. So I believe Randy has called back in. Let me look at the number. Yep, same number. So, all right, let me get this number. And
I'm sorry, that was not a joke. I was loading one of the old shooting ranges where we have a defilade on the side, and I think I got clipped with a .22 or something. Oh my jaw. So what? That, I'm not dead or anything, but I did get clipped on my jaw. And so I'm outside, and my cousin called and said that you guys were all, they were making fun of me, saying that I was dead. I'm not dead. But I did get clipped on the jaw. It's stupid of me.
Yeah, someone's having a little fun prank with the show. So good laugh. Maybe my podcast listeners will enjoy that. So I'll just have to ignore the chat if that's the way people want to go, because I'm going to go on with the show, you guys. I don't know where some of you callers are coming from, but if that was your idea of fun, glad you're in. We probably got a cabal of people here trolling around a blog talk, pranking shows. So it was fun for a few minutes there, guys. So we're going to move on. All right. So Black Lives Matter. So this teacher from my daughter's school goes around saying to all of his students, you know, remember guys, every day, remember guys, Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. So there's just so much of this coming from the school system. And it's just, it's my opinion that racism is being taught here. In public schools, racism is being taught. From the moment that Black children are born, from the moment they can comprehend, they're being told the country's racist, everybody's racist, systemic racism, this, that, and everything. I can't think of a better way to destroy the relationship between people than to tell one group that the other group is all racist and you know, it just – I couldn't even think of, if I wanted my kids to be successful, telling them from the minute they were born, hey, you know, guys, you know, the world isn't fair. And, you're going to have people treating you wrong all the time, and you won't be able to get ahead. And I mean, in my opinion, that's what they do with Black students across the country, not just Black students, Black kids across the country. From the moment they're born, they tell them, then how does that young Black child go out and make friends with someone from a different, racial group, when they've been taught to believe that white people are privileged, white people are, I mean, just, and again, this is all the stuff that comes from public schools. And I can't emphasize enough how, you look at someone like Candace Owens, who I just have huge respect for. She's Black. She's a you know, public, and I'm just not a blogger. She's a politically active social media figure, and she has such intelligent things to say when it comes to race and those kind of things. So how can one Black person who's lived in the same country as other Black people utterly reject this whole notion of systemic racism and all this other stuff, but yet others don't? I mean, and who's going to be the most successful person out of those is the one that says, hey, the whole world isn't racist. You are what you achieve out of life. You're the only person holding yourself back. I mean, in my opinion, the racism in this country exists from the left. The racism in this country is being fostered and fomented by the left. And, you know, if people who jump on the bandwagon, because whether it's perceived to be the pop culture thing to do, they're making it worse as well. I mean, I know people from my gym who said the same thing. Supporting Black Lives Matter, not understanding the motives of Black Lives Matter and all these things. And you know, it's... well, educated, well-intentioned people who just fall into that media-driven mindset to perpetuate this blatant racism. So, going to morph that into my next topic, which I was going to talk about, was whether or not we are a free country. So, I'm going to pose that question: do you think we're still a free country? I used to ponder that over time. I used to sit there and think to myself, are we still a free country? Back in, you know, the 2000s, George W. Bush's presidency, so on and so forth. Because we're clearly not as free of a country as we once were. I mean, I think there's some moments you can look back in time and see where we took a dive off of the freedom train. One of those places I think we took a dive off of the freedom train was the New Deal. I call it the Raw Deal. Social Security is the greatest theft, generational theft in the history of mankind, in the history of our country. I think that, sorry, I'm trying to ignore this chat here, but it's funny because now someone obviously went to Google, spoof my old number, a very old number for a phone number. It's amazing how people can do that. Sorry for my podcast listeners. I'm going to take my eyes back off the chat and ignore it. Whether or not we're a free country, time for a reality check. Back in the George W. Bush days, again, we're not as free of a country as it used to be. I think back to Social Security, the Raw Deal, and I think we lost a huge amount of freedom there. And a lot of times freedom comes from money, because if you have the money, if you can enjoy the fruits of your labor, spend them how you want, use them to satisfy your family's wants and needs. I mean, that is freedom, the freedom to choose, the freedom to purchase what you want. So money allows you to do that. Money is how you support yourself. Money. So I think that the New Deal was a definite point in time you can look to and say, we lost a ton of freedom right there with the passage of that legislation. Again, I call it the Raw Deal, but I don't know if that was the 30s or 40s, something in that time frame. But then over the years, I mused, are we still a free country? I used to think that during George W. Bush's presidency. Are we still a free country? And what determines free? Like, how would you decide if something is free? How would you decide if a country is free? So I used to kind of, how would you gauge freedom? I used to muse to myself that it was the percent of economic activity that was government spending versus private sector spending. You look at total amount of government spending and what was that as a percentage of all spending in the country, you know, the percentage of all economic activity that came from government spending versus private sector spending. And we were getting to a point where government sector spending, government at all levels, that would mean government at state, local, federal levels, that amount of government spending, when that exceeds the amount of private sector spending, you could say that we've reached that tipping point where we're not on the freedom side of things, because most economic activity is driven by the government. I think that was another measure of whether or not we were free or not. But lately, I've come to a new conclusion, and it's come to me that at the current point in time, I think that we are not free as a country. And the reason I say that we're not free, because again, whether that characterization of freedom based upon level of government spending, what percentage of the economy is government spending and private spending, I think that's a relatively good measure. You could use that as a benchmark of whether we're still a free country or not, and as how free we are. Hank's got some great comments in the chat. Hank says, the dirty secret of Keynesian economic theory, government spending becomes critical to the economy after the tipping point is reached. Cut government spending, direct effect on GDP. Yeah. Great comment there, Hank. And I agree. This past couple weeks, as I see what's happened with the presidential election and stuff, I've come to a different basis of judging whether or not we're a free country. And right now I'm of the belief that we are not a free country. If we, the people, don't control, decide elections, and I believe this election was stolen, I think you know it. I know it. I think everybody knows it. And I think liberals are okay with the election being stolen because their pursuit of their perceived utopia is more important to them. They don't care about freedom to begin with. I mean, the Constitution to a liberal is not a life preserver. It's not something that protects rights, but it's an obstacle. But I've come to the conclusion that I think right now we are not free. If we want to call ourselves a free country again, we need to address this because if the people aren't the ones electing our officials and we're not, I mean, anyone with the brain knows this election was stolen. And if you don't know this election was stolen, again, like I said, anyone with a brain knows that this election was stolen. So until we have free and fair elections, I don't think we can call ourselves a free country. And I think it needs to be addressed immediately and not wait and see what happens in the next election, but we need to do something now. I mean, and I love the Declaration of Independence. And I quote it, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And that consent of the governed part, we no longer have a government that is by the consent of the government, by the consent of the governed. Because when we don't have free and fair elections, that is our consent. And we, the people, didn't consent to this. The people voted for something other than the people voted for Donald Trump as president. So that's my as I ponder this question over the years, like when people talk, oh, it's great to live in a free country. Like, how free are we? And I used to use that standard to myself. I used to say to myself, well, you know, we'll gauge how free we are by how much of the economy is controlled by government spending versus private sector. But I think now I look at it from a whole different benchmark, a whole different process. If we don't have free and fair elections, we are certainly not a free country. Certainly not a free country. Here, Hank says, but yet all the left and the DNC want to unify. Screw them. They are the ones who went scorched earth. Yeah, it's so funny how liberals divide us. For the last 4 years, the left and liberals have done everything they can to divide us, to draw strife between people. And now that they think they've got their guy as president, oh, now let's all just get along. Isn't it funny how that works, Hank? So that's my conclusion that it's hard to say because look where we've come in 9 months. Look where we were 9 months ago. 9 months ago, the economy was roaring. Trump in office was reducing restrictions. We were getting some accountability from the Justice Department. The Attorney General was investigating some of the corruption, some of the deep state corruption. All of a sudden, coronavirus, lockdowns. Riots, mobs, cities burning, police doing nothing, people that defended themselves getting charged with murder and in jail. I'm talking about Kyle Rittenhouse. I mean, just look at the absolute crash of this country in the past 9 months. And it started with coronavirus, and then it exacerbated with the riots and the mobs. After the Jacob George Floyd incident. And then here we are. The economy took a digger. Freedom took a digger. And then cap all that off. Well, add in big tech fascism, big tech censorship. It's not even subtle anymore. And then to cap it all off with a stolen election. I mean, it's depressing. I mean, the last 3 weeks since the election, I've been depressed. And you have to ask yourself, what are you going to do? I mean, our kids are not going to grow up in the same kind of country we did if we don't write this. What's the point? And I've said this to myself. What's the point of voting? What's the point of donating to a candidate? What's the point of advocating for a candidate? What's the point of endorsing a candidate if they're just going to steal the election? And I'm shocked and actually sad how many few people have joined the Wisconsin Carry MeWe page. I mean, I know people love Facebook, but in terms of freedom, I mean, fascist book has zero value for any freedom pursuits, any conservative pursuits. I mean, if you want to see what your friends ate for dinner, great. Facebook can do that. If you want to see the first pictures of school, great. Bullseye. Facebook will help you with that. You want to organize as conservatives? Zero value. You want to dispute the mainstream liberal messaging? Zero value. You want to support self-defense? Zero value. Facebook has zero value in any of those areas. And look, I mean, fascist book isn't stupid. I mean, they have every metric in the world, and they know how often fascist book knows how often you're on their platform. They know how long you're on the platform. They know what you do when you're on the platform. They know what you post. They know who you are politically. Fascist book doesn't want to ban all conservatives. There's no way. Fascist book wants to stifle conservatives. Fascist book is the concentration camp for conservatives. Fascist book is the re-education camp. And when you share something pro-Trump and no one likes it because Facebook shadow banned it, you'll think you're alone and you'll think you are the only one who cares and you'll think that it's no use and you'll give up. And that's the point. Facebook doesn't want to ban you. If you think to yourself, you know, well, I'm good, Facebook hasn't banned me. I mean, no way, you're not good. The worst part of Facebook is conditioning yourself to not say things that will get you kicked off the platform. The worst part of Facebook is what you're seeing and observing from other people is going to be sterilized either through their shadowy algorithms and their shadow banning or through their censorship. You're not going to see a true representation of how your friends feel, of how other people feel. And that's how they isolate you. They'll make you feel like you're alone because you'll think, oh, I mean, this used to, the Well-Armed Radio page on Fascist Book. I used to post something on Fascist Book on the Well-Armed Radio page. And it would go viral. It would get thousands and thousands of likes. And then all of a sudden, I'd post something similar and I'd get nothing. I shouldn't say nothing. I'd get a couple dozen likes, a couple shares, so the same kind of thing that used to get thousands of likes and hundreds of shares. And I thought to myself, oh, maybe that didn't appeal to people. Then I realized, no, it's because Facebook was shadow banning Well-Armed Radio. Stuff that I'd post enough stuff about questioning the coronavirus narrative, post enough stuff supportive of Kyle Rittenhouse, as far as that being self-defense. And so, yeah, so Facebook starts shadow banning me. And then that, for a second, it made me think that, oh, people just didn't agree with me. People didn't share my thoughts. Then I realized what was going on. But that's what's going to happen to all kinds of other people. When you stay on Facebook, and it has to be sanitized because you're going to be putting Facebook, they're conditioning people. Most people, you know, they say something that's not allowed, they get put in Facebook jail for 10 days or 20 days. So what are you going to do? You're going to stop saying that. And you think to yourself, well, I still believe the same things. But what you don't realize is then your friends don't see people saying things, example, supportive of Kyle Rittenhouse. And then your friends think, yeah, nobody supports Kyle Rittenhouse. That's how Facebook manipulates your mind. You think you still believe what you believe, but then when you think no one else believes what you believe, that isolates you. You feel intellectually isolated. And that's how Facebook controls you. I remember the greatest part of the Tea Party movement was that I remember thinking I'm not alone. You know, George W. Bush was so demonized in the media, and George W. Bush didn't fight back. And I mean, George W. Bush was a puss. And I thought that freedom just didn't have a constituency back during George W. Bush's presidency. Everything on the news, I couldn't believe Bush got elected because it seemed like everybody was, you know, the news media made you think everybody was against him. When he got reelected, that shocked me as well. But then Obama's elected, and then the Tea Party shows up. And when the Tea Party showed up, I thought, wow, look at all the people who care. You know, the Tea Party ushered in Scott Walker, and the Tea Party ushered in all kinds of conservatives. Now it's dissipated, and Republicans infiltrated it and helped kill it with their inaction, their hijacking. But that feeling of not being alone was so powerful of the Tea Party movement. It said to other people, you're not alone. And that was super important. But that's the problem now with Facebook, is how Facebook is dictating the messaging. And Facebook is most successful when they shadow ban people and when they shadow ban things, not when they outright ban people. Because Facebook will convince you that resistance is futile because you'll feel like you're the only one. You won't see anything supportive of Kyle Rittenhouse. You won't see anything pushing back against the Coronanoia bullshit. You won't see anything pushing anything supportive of President Trump because Facebook will limit that. Even if your friends post it, Facebook will make it so it doesn't show up in your news feed. And you'll just think, oh, nobody cares about Trump. I have yet to watch the movie The Social Dilemma, but I've heard it's really, really good, and I can't wait to watch it because I think it'll dive into some of these topics. Or actually, I know it dives into some of these topics of how – but that's what people don't realize is how social media affects your mindset. And I beg you, like if you have friends on Facebook that are pro-gun, please invite them to join the Wisconsin Carry page on MeWe. Because we really – here's what MeWe needs. I mean, there's things I like about MeWe and things I don't like about MeWe. Things I like is there's no manipulation of content. There's privacy guarantees. Things I like about MeWe, it's small and it's kind of focused. You know, Facebook was so big. I had so many friends. Like, you end up seeing the logarithms, the algorithms ended up showing you the same friends' content all the time. And you've got 400 friends, but you only saw the content for five of them because Facebook determined those are the ones you're most interested in. But MeWe needs more content because content drives interaction. You know, people join MeWe, they don't see any content, they come back a day later and it's the same thing. Nobody's posted anything new, so they don't visit. So like for me, I make a point to post more on MeWe than I did on Facebook just to provide content, just to provide something for people to see. So they'll make a point to go back. So that's my other thing is if you're on MeWe, I would encourage you to post more content, maybe even more than usual, because when there's more content, more people will visit and get interested in it. So that's something that we need on MeWe in order to have MeWe grow. But look, MeWe's the most, after the election, MeWe became the most downloaded app. That's how many people are fleeing Facebook and the big tech censorship. So what do we got here? 17 minutes left of the show. Other two things I'm going to talk about tonight was how to wag the media dog. Now, I've done this topic before. Trump wagged the – no, 17 minutes. I'm going to skip that one. Let's skip to I was going to talk about riots, red flag laws, and self-defense. All right. So if Facebook can flag you or ban you for violating their community standards, when you know how in bed, and that's been happening. Look, I got banned from Facebook. I have no idea why. Well, I shouldn't say I have no idea. They gave me no reason or warning why. So I've had to assume it was either something I said because I had many posts supportive of Kyle Rittenhouse or because I had many posts supportive of many posts against the coronavirus narrative. So I'm still trying to get rid of some stuff here. I think Hank's the only one left. Hank, you must be the only one legitimate left in the chat here because everybody else left. And oh, I also forgot to shoot. There's more comments here that I forgot to. Lon says ignore them. Sorry, I didn't click the show more comments here, so I wasn't doing a good job of monitoring the MeWe post here with my regular people I trust and know as listeners. But yeah, so Hank on the chat, I think when I started ignoring those guys, they all left. And so Hank is still here on the chat on Blog Talk. So anyway, so riots, red flag laws, and self-defense. If Facebook can flag you and ban you for violating their community standards, and we know how in bed Democrats are with big tech, Google, Facebook. I mean, the amount of money that Cuckerberg, as I call him, the amount of money that Cuckerberg donated to Democrat causes. I mean, I think I read like $400 million or something like that. But the amount of data that there was people from Google that were part of Obama's administration, they'll certainly be a part of Biden's administration. And think of the information that Google has on you and on me and on everybody. Think of the information that Facebook has on you. If Facebook can flag you and ban you for violating their community standards, knowing how in bed Democrats are with big tech, I pose the question, how far are we from a place where speaking against the government gets you red flagged and a knock on your door to take safe possession of your guns? I mean, think about that. I think it's a legitimate concern. If you say something on social media, on fascist book, on Twitter, I call it Twitter, where you're speaking against the government, what if that gets you flagged? Because Democrats believe the biggest threat is right-wing extremists, armed citizens. That's why when people say, sometimes we in the gun crowd, we get the mindset that we, sometimes we in the gun crowd, we get the mindset that we, the Democrats with gun control, they're really trying to keep guns in the hands of criminals. And when we have to learn, you have to learn that that's not what Democrats are trying to do. With gun control, Democrats are trying to take your guns away. It's a false notion that the reason Democrats want gun control, crime is a phony excuse for gun control. Democrats don't care about crime. If they did, they wouldn't be defunding the police. They wouldn't be putting criminals back on the streets and using the streets as a jail. Democrats want the guns out of your hands. You're the target of Democrat gun control. So sometimes us pro-gun folks, we sit here and we think, how can they be so stupid to propose a law that's only going to affect the law-abiding? Because they say they want to stop crime. And that's when you have to realize they don't want to stop crime. They want to stop you, the law-abiding citizen. You are, we joke and we say, oh, if you require gun registration, the criminals aren't going to turn around and register their guns. That's not what liberals are after. Liberals don't care if criminals don't pose a risk to the government. Criminals pose a risk to me and you. But the people that pose a risk to government in the eyes of the liberal left and their desire for 100% total control, the people that the liberals want to control with gun control is you, the law-abiding. You're the one that they don't want guns in the hands of. And we think, sometimes we think naively that, oh, it's they're trying to stop criminals from getting guns, and we are too. No, we may be interested in criminals not getting guns, but the left is interested in us not getting guns, and that's a fact. So knowing that Facebook, how Facebook can flag you and knows everything, knows your political, how far are we from a place where speaking against the government on social media gets you red flagged and there's a knock at your door to take safe possession of your guns? Again, it's a legit concern. These red flag laws are so dangerous, but I'm telling you, that's the big thing that Biden is not going to push. Biden and Harris, they're not going to push assault weapons bans. They're not going to push magazine capacity bans. They're going to push universal background checks and red flag laws first. So Hank keeps making some great comments here on the chat, but I can't figure out how to close. Oh, I did it. Finally, I got it. Okay. It's gone. Hank says gun control is about disarming those who wouldn't know. Oh, who don't kowtow to ideology. Absolutely. Absolutely. And the sooner people realize that gun control is, that that's what the goal of gun control is, the better. Because there's too many people who fall into that faulty notion that they really are just trying to keep guns out of the hands of the bad guys. I'm telling you, it's not. But the mechanism here is going to be, they're going to push red flag laws and universal background checks first. Because once they have the red flag laws, like that's the gold, that's, red flag laws are the mechanism by which they can come take your guns. Universal background checks are the mechanism by which they know what guns you have. They need those two things together, and they can totally push those under the guise of crime and safety. But we have to resist it. We can't, the law-abiding citizens are the ones that can't let their guns be registered. When the government knows what guns you have, and the government has a mechanism to take them through red flag laws, you have no protection. No protection. Because once they have the red flag laws and the universal background checks, they know what gun everybody has, and they know they have a mechanism to take them. Then they start to pass the gun control. Then they put the magazine capacity bans. Then they put the assault weapons bans, because they've already got the list of who has them, which they need. Because otherwise you just say, hey, that's what, look, I had that gun, but I sold it. Or I had that, I get that gun was stolen. They need those red flag laws, they need the universal background checks so they know what guns you have. And then with the red flag laws, they have a mechanism to come take them. And so once they have those, then they're going to pass the assault weapons bans. And unlike in the past where things have been grandfathered in, you kind of had to grandfather them in when you didn't know, when you don't have a national gun registry, when you don't know who owns what guns, you kind of had to grandfather the old one in because you really didn't have a mechanism to come seize previously purchased and sold guns. But when you have universal background checks, which has to come along with a universal gun registry, when you have universal background, when you have a national gun registry, which is has to be there to have a universal background check, they can do what they've always wanted to do, and they can pass gun control retroactively. That's what they've never been able to do before. When they passed the assault weapons ban in the 80s, they had to grandfather the guns that were already out there because they had no way to go get those. But once they have a national gun registry, then they can make their universal background, then they can make their gun control retroactive. They don't have to grandfather you in. Because they can say, we know who has these guns, we're coming to get them. So that's why we need to resist so strongly these innocent sounding, and 80% of people support red flag laws. 80% of people support universal background checks. You ask that same group of people and less than half of them support a universal gun registry. They don't understand that in order to have universal background checks, you'd have to have a universal gun registry. How could you enforce it? Someone's got a gun. Did they pass a background check to get it? Well, you'd have to keep a record of the background check. You'd have to keep who had the gun, who sold it, who bought it, serial number. You'd have to, there's no way to enforce universal background checks without universal gun registry. So legitimate concern, big tech, they can flag you and ban you for violating their community standards. They would certainly be making that information available to their deep state swamp creatures in whoever, the FBI, the DOJ, and the government. Look what we've got here. We've got riots, mobs, police ordered to do nothing, rule by executive order. And even unconstitutional executive orders by governors are being accepted and enforced. And like I said earlier in the show, look what's happened in 9 months. We went from freedom rolling, and we skipped right over socialism, and we immersed ourselves in fascism with the coronavirus, the phony lockdowns, the unconstitutional emergency powers that have turned into dictatorial powers, mask mandates, which are just a joke. And then, again, these riots and mobs and self-defense is now what's under attack with Kyle Rittenhouse. I was on WVCY a couple weeks ago, and I said, a lot of things, but one of the things I said was that it doesn't matter what gun you can own. It doesn't matter what gun you can carry, because if you use a gun, and it's even in a situation that should be justified, but it's deemed murder, like with Kyle Rittenhouse, and that guy, and he's going to have a trial, or maybe makes it a trial. I don't believe you'll find a jury in Kenosha that would convict that guy, that kid. Not a chance. If self-defense becomes unacceptable, you don't need a gun. There's no point in having a gun. There's no point in having concealed carry. Because it does you no good to carry a gun if you're afraid to use it because you'd go to jail. Now, you might be alive, but in jail. but we can't let self-defense become – look how they're trying to characterize self-defense. Anybody in Kenosha that got together with one other person or just by themselves, self-defense is being labeled some pejorative term, militia. And that's another term we got to seize back is militia. We can't let militia be a pejorative term. But self-defense is being characterized, you act in self-defense, all of militia, radical. I mean, that's a dangerous, dangerous path we're walking down here. And it's the cultural attack on guns that we have to stop. I said this before, legislation will not protect, the Second Amendment won't protect right to carry. The state constitution won't protect right to carry. Castle Doctrine won't protect right to carry. Shall issue laws won't protect right to carry. Supreme Court rulings will not protect right to carry. If we lose the cultural war, if we let schools teach kids that guns are evil, guns are bad, and prejudice kids against guns, if we let the media perpetuate this notion that self-defense, example Kyle Rittenhouse, is murder, there's nothing that will protect us. The Defense of Marriage Act signed by Bill Clinton did not protect same-sex marriage. The gay rights crowd, this is not an opinion on gay rights, the gay rights crowd lost at every juncture. They lost in court. They lost in the legislatures. They lost everywhere. So what did they do? They went about creating a cultural change. They put gay characters, and again, not an opinion on gay rights, but this is how they did it. It worked. They put gay characters in pop culture, gay characters in movies, gay characters in television shows. They promoted the gay culture. They didn't diss each other. They didn't run away from each other. They didn't throw each other in the bus like gun folks do, throw each other under the bus. They went all in on the cultural shift, and then look what happened a few years later. Now the Supreme Court itself knocks down the Defense of Marriage Act. I mean, that's how it works. You drive that cultural change, everything else is going to follow. Nothing will protect you when the cultural change takes over. When the cultural change goes against guns, the Second Amendment won't protect you. The courts won't protect you. Legislators won't protect you. We have to drive a cultural change, and that's why I pushed so hard for 2A Tuesdays. We have to make guns cool. We have to make, in the younger generation, we have to make them embrace the culture of gun ownership. Because if we don't do that, we're going to lose the cultural war. And if we lose the cultural war, the Second Amendment doesn't matter. Court rulings don't matter. Supreme Court cases don't matter. Nothing matters. It's all going to come down if we lose the cultural war. All right, so anyway, that's the show for tonight. Not a bad show. Got a little distracted in the middle there with those trolls that pranked me. So if you guys enjoyed the show, thanks for tuning in. I don't know if I should say thanks for calling. My only caller was Randy from California, who I think was the first part of Randy's call was okay, and then Randy went full prank on me. That's fine. Not mad they did it, only mad that I let it distract me a little bit too long. So I see a Zach, I see a Lon, Stan, thanks for tuning in, you guys, there on the chat on Well-Armed Radio on the MeWe page. And Lon's, great to have you guys with us. You guys have a great week. We'll do it again next Sunday. Carry on, be well-armed.